Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. This is most likely the last daily editorial I will be posting on this Friday, January 29th, the last trading day in January. And boy, oh boy, what a crazy and wild month this has been. We're going to be chatting energy, as I am chatting with Joseph Schatcher. He is the editor of the Schatcher Energy Report and also writes the Eye on Energy, which is a free newsletter that Joseph outlines the data in the energy sector, a really high-level look at what the data is showing us for energy and more specifically oil. Joseph, let's start off with that. A quick review on some of the recent data. Look, overall, the crude price, oil prices in general have continued to be stronger than a lot of people expected, as they are still holding above $50 a barrel for crude. But the data, it's starting to come in a bit more bearish. Break down some of the recent reports that you have shared with your subscribers, please.
Yeah, the positive side for the bulls is that Saudi Arabia said that they would cut back a million barrels a day in February and March of 2021 so that there would be less supply because they were concerned about the problem with the pandemic spreading, the new mutations, of course, the UK, South Africa, and Brazil, and they thought demand for energy would weaken. And of course, normally demand weakens after you come out of winter, which we're still in the depths of. But sometime in March, demand's going to fall off by 1.5 million to 2.5 million barrels worldwide, of which America would be 1.5 million. And that is the reason why they've done the official cutback, and the market liked that. The other thing that helped the market this week was the announcement on Wednesday with the EIA data that commercial crude inventories fell 9.9 million barrels. The assumption was there would be a build of 400,000 barrels. So the market took that strongly and rallied into the 53, and then in the last couple of days it's backed off. But the basic assumption that people had was, oh, that's good news. It really isn't, because when you look at the data, imports, net imports, were a swing of 2 million barrels a day, of which imports fell 981,000 or 6.9 million on the week, and exports rose by 1.1 million or 7.7 million barrels on the week. So you had a 14.6 million barrel inventory swing because of imports and exports compared to that 9.9, and you're really talking about a 4.7 million barrel increase in inventories if it wasn't for that shipment issue. And so to me, that is the bearish thing. We also saw continued weakness in gasoline demand. It fell by about 279,000 barrels from 8.1 million last week, the week before, to 7.8, and that's down 960,000 from 8.8 million the year before. So we're still seeing weakness in the demand side. And again, I think that's going to be the real key is, lockdowns and curfews and all the things we're seeing in Europe. We're now starting to see more problems in Japan. Of course, China is started yesterday the Lunar New Year holiday season, where a lot of people in the big cities go into rural China where they came from, and usually it's tens of millions of people, and that holiday season can last up to 40 days. So if the Chinese stop that amount of travel, or if the pandemic picks up in China, China's really the only growth engine for energy this year. And if they do have to go to more lockdowns and the energy consumption weakens, they're going to be in big problems because they have bought a lot of crude oil and filled their inventory pipeline system. And if all of a sudden the demand's not there, then they're not going to be buyers in future months, which is going to exacerbate the glut problem. And that, to me, means we're going to see a bust of 50 probably in the next couple of weeks and head into the mid-40s, 42 to 46 range for the month of February. And then March is going to be the wild one. How is the pandemic worse? Are these mutations worse? Is China really going into more lockdowns? And if they are, then we bust 40, and that's when we're going to see a significant correction. We've been in that mode. We sent out a sell signal to our clients, our subscribers, on January 14th when the index was at 102, the S&P TSX Energy Index. and booked a lot of great profits from the March low when we had the buy signal, if you remember, on March 13th. And so we then removed 14 of the 25 names on our buy list and told people to sell them. And we after the five-day period, sold the ones that we owned. And we're now sitting very liquid and waiting for the next buy signal, which probably will be sometime in April.
So, Joseph, the way that I understand this then is that that EIA data on Wednesday, it looked bullish, but fact of the matter is a lot of exports helped to lead to that inventory decline. But the production in the U.S., is it still maintaining its current pace, even though the variance, again, was because of all the exports that, well, as you're outlining, we don't know that we can depend on?
Yeah, the interesting thing is for a number of, probably a few months, we've been sitting at 11 million barrels a day of U.S. production. But last week, we saw the first decline, 100,000 barrels a day to 10.9, and that's down from 13 million a year ago, so down by 2.1 million barrels. Again, with all of the increase in the rig count the activity that normally picks up at the beginning of the year, the fact that we're now starting to see declines and the EIA is forecasting that that will continue for the next few months, that the amount of money being spent is not replacing declines. That's a long-term bullish factor, but the problem you have is there's 6-7 million barrels of excess supply around the world, most of it in Saudi Arabia. So until we tighten up that excess and the amount of cheating by other countries, Iran, Iraq, Nigeria, Venezuela, Kazakhstan, Russia, because they're part of OPEC Plus, the fact that they're producing more than their quota makes things tough for OPEC and tough for Saudi Arabia. And so Saudi Arabia, after not getting an agreement with Russia, unilaterally made the decision to cut back, hoping that they would keep prices where they are. And other countries are saying, look, the more oil we can sell at 50, it's a whole lot better than selling it at 40 or whatever. So let's take advantage of Saudi Arabia's decision to cut back.
Okay. Now, there's one other thing that you mentioned in that Eye on Energy report that said crude oil stocks are now 45 million barrels or a little over 10% above last year's level of 431 million barrels. Where is the balance here? How do we usually see this inventory make its way through the system?
Well, normally you should be expecting, if you're seeing weaker demand, that the commercial stocks would come down because the refiners aren't producing the product that we want to consume because jet fuel demand is down, gasoline demand is down. So the refiners have cut back their activity. The refinery runs last week were 81.7%, and normally refineries want to be in the 90% to get their maximum profitability, and that's down from 87.2 a year ago. So these numbers are weaker than they need to be for the refiners, and that's why you're seeing profitability. Chevron's announcements today showed that the profitability wasn't there on the downstream as much as they had hoped for, and that they're trying to cut their costs to get the downstream profitable and be ready for post-pandemic. So I think when we see Suncor and Cenovus because of Husky now, and when we see Imperial Oil, those are going to be worth watching to see how they did on the upstream compared to the downstream.
So then when it comes to this, I guess, general bullishness that has been around for energy, it is all a lot predicated on the whole narrative of an economic restart, but we actually don't know when that economic restart happens. In your eyes, is the market looking at the springtime, as you've outlined, as that's when that economic restart should happen? And if it doesn't happen, then we should be starting to see some, I guess, forward projections from some of these companies in the next couple months?
Yeah, I think that's the basic key, is that everybody originally was looking at Q2 saying we're going to get back to normal and okay, by the summer we can go back, our kids can go to school, we can do all the things we want to do. And yet, with all the announcements that we're seeing about the delays in vaccines from our prime minister in Canada, announcements from Pfizer, AstraZeneca about production problems in their plants in Europe, I think to get to In terms of the United States, there's 330 million people. So if you need two doses and you want to get to herd immunity of 80-90%, you're going to need 300 million doses for the first shot, 300 million doses for the second shot, which means you need 600 million. And the president is talking, wouldn't it be wonderful if we get to 100 or 150 million doses by April? So if you look at it, to get to August and have everybody, having their shots, it means you've got to have, people getting injected at a rate of 3 million persons per day, and we're barely getting over a million. So I think the wake-up call will come in March when people realize, hey, we're not going to be getting, if we're not in the high-risk groups, we're not going to get our shot in Q2. And then people will start saying, well, when is when? And when is the normality coming back? And if people start realizing it may be Q4, it may even be 2022, the World Health Organization is saying in reports this week that to get herd immunity around the world is going to take into 2022 later or even 2023. So we're beginning to see a number of places say that this assumption we had of getting back to normal is not going to happen, definitely in Q2. Once that becomes realized, I think that's going to be taken bearishly.
All right. Now, Joseph, what about the relationship of energy to the underlying U.S. equity markets? I've talked a lot about it over the last really couple weeks, is that a lot of people are calling for a broad market pullback. But clearly, a lot of sectors, including energy, have benefited from the U.S. market's ability to hang up there and even consistently reach some new all-time highs, although we are starting to see some weakness this week. Where's the balance between U.S. markets and how those can drive energy prices?
Well, energy stocks have done exceedingly well. If you compare the Dow to the energy index, you can see that the energy index doubled or tripled the move in the Dow from March to the high in January, from March 2020 to January of 2021. In Canada, we had a number of stocks that went up six times, like Whitecap from the low went up six times from low to high. We had others that went up three and four times. So there was some fabulous moves. And so we triggered the buy signal in March and then the sell signal on January 14th. So our clients did extremely well on those recommendations. And my thought process now is that we're going to be patient and wait for the next buy signal, which if the market comes down as severely as we think it can, 24,000 on the Dow, on the S&P TSX Energy Index, which I said was 90 and up at the high was 103.60. We think it's going to go below 60 and maybe even below 50. So there's still a lot of downside for the energy securities. And part of that's going to be Q4 results are not going to be very good. And they start coming in Canada at the end of February and through March. The U.S. big guys like Chevron reported today. And we're going to probably see that Q1's not going to look very good if the price of oil breaks 50. So I think that there's a lot of reason to be on the sidelines. What we're doing for our clients is now that we said sell and you've got cash, we're saying to them, we're going to update you on the results of Q4 results and then Q1 results when they come out. And this way you can get a handle about what names you want to own when we get the next buy signal and you can put together your buy list. So that when we have the next action alert buy, we send out that to our clients, they can be ready to move on the stocks that they want for their portfolios for the next major move.
Okay, so you are advocating, let's say, a larger than normal cash position and keeping your shopping list really active so that you know which ones to get into. Do you have a focus in terms of U.S. or Canadian producers? And also, what level or what stage of company do you seem to be favoring in terms of when we do get that bottom, seeing the best torque?
Well, it's interesting. A lot of people look at the large caps, and they have done well. And we did well with Tourmaline and Whitecap in Canada. Our focus is on Canada, not as much in the States, but the energy and the energy service sector on both sides of the border did well. There were nice moves in Baker Hughes, nice moves in Schlumberger in the States. Of course, there were nice moves in the big and middle-sized caps that had good balance sheets. You had a takeover of Noble Energy in the fourth quarter by Chevron. So there were some deals done during the quarter, and acquisitions woke everybody up to the sector and how cheap it was. So we're looking at both sides of the border performing, but our specific focus here for us is the Canadian side. But it can be Canadian domiciled companies or Canadian companies that work around the world. And we have Canadian companies that we like that work in Colombia. Some of them work overseas in Europe and Asia. So the reality is because of the disclosure information, in fact, that most of the companies are headquartered in Calgary, we have that research edge by being able to access the companies and talking to them on a regular basis, which is why we focus on the Canadian companies, and it's worked out very well. One of the small caps that, you asked about the performance of large and small, something like a Tourmaline tripled from the low from March to the high in June. We had Whitecap that went up over six times, which is one of the larger oil companies after the mergers with the takeovers they did of NAL and Torque. Now there'll be 80,000 BOEs a day, so it's a nice sized company. But one of the small caps that had a very good success drilling onshore for natural gas in Trinidad, that stock went up from, we recommended it in 2018 at 19 cents, and we put it on the sell list when it was at 292. So we got a 17 times move on that one little junior. So it really matters your liquidity requirements, dividend requirements, but there's interesting names that we had in our list all the way down from the smallest to the largest, dividend, non-dividend, and I think we're going to continue to recommend those kinds of ideas, and depending upon individuals' risk preference or liquidity preference or dividend income preference, they can then have names to choose to fit their portfolios.
All right. Well, Joseph, I am going to post a link to the Schatcher Energy Report, and that is where you can also sign up for that Eye on Energy to, at the very least, keep up to date on some of the fundamental data that is coming out of the sector. Joseph, it's great having you on the show, buddy. I really appreciate all of your time, and I hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you so much. Always a pleasure.